everybody, to the Aaron's High Gavin Mitchell radio program. It's another week, another Saturday, another day has gone by. Today is June 9, 2018. We're here live for the next 2 hours. And, you know, my phone, I don't know what's wrong with my phone. It tells me it's going to be hot and sunny. It is hot, but it looks like it's going to rain. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, the weather, that's why they try to predict weather, because they don't know what's going to happen. Anyway, I start my day with CEFCO Hilltop Coffee, Premium Joe. Go to CEFCO Hilltop here in Cameron and get your coffee, get your smokes, your cigarettes, or you can get, they got a special going on, Monsters, 3 for $5. Go check it out. Say hi to Becky and the girls there and get yourself some coffee, gasoline, cigarettes, whatever it takes to get your day going, Hilltop, CEFCO, and Cameron. Now, we're simulcasting, as always, on KMIL right here at 105.1 FM The Ranch, and also out of Rockdale, KRXT 98.5 FM. So all you Rockdalonians or anybody else who's listening, the number here to the studio is 254-697-6633. Give us a call if you've got some input, some things you want to bring up concerning self-defense or anything of that nature. But as always, we've got a good show, and I'm going to start it off with telling you what's coming up in the show and some of the highlights. Again, we've got true stories of self-defense using mouse guns. I don't care what it is, and whatever it is, I don't want to be shot with it. So stay tuned and hear how these little mouse guns play out. The stories are pretty good. This week's License to Carry Attorney segment will once again go over common law marriage. Attorney extraordinaire Ben Ross Watson had to leave suddenly last week, so we're going to continue on with that topic. And if we're lucky, maybe we'll have Super Attorney Rick Dodd come in as well. So we'll see what happens at about 20 after 10. Later, we have a few items to address in our topic of interest segment. So get your calendars open and write these dates down. And then before the end of the first hour, the delicious Janae Goodman with another segment of Tactical Snacking. She's going to be going over, it's going to be a repeat actually, because she couldn't make it here as well. Something came up in her schedule. So we're going to replay dehydration, beef jerky, things of that nature. So it's going to be pretty good. Check it out. At 11, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon. The mouthpiece of memorabilia. The curator of credibility. The guardian of goodness. How are those, Trey? Those are three new ones I did. An all-around good guy, Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. This week's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms, is the Glock 19 MOS. In 9mm, if you want a red dot on your Glock 19, this is the gun to get. Check it out on my Facebook page at aaronsgunshop.com. I got a little short video on it. You can check it out. While you're there, like us on Facebook, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and follow us on Instagram. My special guest today via telephone will be my good friend and state representative, Hugh Shine. Hugh and I go back a ways, and it's always a pleasure to speak with him, and we'll be discussing Governor Abbott's unveiling of the school security plan in regards to all the school shootings, especially here in Texas. This will be a very informative segment and interview, so stay tuned. And finally, another butt-whipping from Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. She's going to teach us how to protect ourselves by using me as practice target. So, got a good show coming up, and we're going to start it off right now. We're going to do true stories of self-defense. And this is primarily about mouse guns. And a mouse gun is like a 22, a 25, a 32, something small like that. So story number one goes as follows. 3 hours before he died, a recently paroled safe robber admitted two thefts previous to the one in which he had been shot. With a cotton sack over his head and a 12-gauge shotgun in his hand, he had entered the Hartsville, South Carolina grocery where Mrs. Lillian Cassius's sister, Miss Lillian Cassius, oh, here we go, sister of the owner, was visiting and announced a stick-up. The owner picked up a chair and threw it at the gunman and then closed in on him. Mrs. Kassab found the 32 caliber pistol kept in the store and fired four shots, three of which mortally wounded the would-be thief. Now, here's my commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a wow. These two ladies got it going on. This is a perfect bounding and overwatch maneuver. The owner causes a distraction, and then the sister moves in for the kill. It's great teamwork, ladies. Great. Oh, yeah, and she did it with a 32 caliber mouse gun. Now, let's go to story number two. Three men entered an Oakland, California liquor store and demanded money. When one leveled a gun at him, Clayton Burroughs reached for a revolver he kept behind a counter and exchanged 8 shots with the holdup. The man dropped with bullets in the head, chest, and leg. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, the bad guy with the gun had multiple shots to the head, chest, and leg. While the store owner had a gun pointed at him, he maintained his composure and made his shots count. Excellent. That one didn't actually clarify what kind of caliber it was, but it's probably a 38 or something. Story number 3. A gunman died in Chicago hospital after being shot 3 times by his intended victim, tavern owner Samuel Evans. The dead man was attempted to hold up the tavern using a patron as a shield. When the assailant released the customer and moved behind the bar to the cash register, Evans drew a .25 automatic from his pocket and fired 5 shots. Now, ladies and gentlemen, another mouse gun being used, this time a .25 ACP. So don't tell me a .25 ACP isn't enough. It's all about shot placement. Now, granted, larger is more devastating, but mouse guns can kill too. Just not, do good shot placement. Story number 4. Complying with the demand of an armed bandit, Joe DeCour, manager of a beverage store in Beaumont, Texas, emptied the contents of his cash register into a paper sack. But when the gunman told DeCour to get his wallet, the manager pulled from his pocket a .25 caliber pistol and shot the bandit in the chest. Ladies and gentlemen, it appears that only one shot is what it took to stop this scenario, and again, it was with a .25 auto in the chest. No matter the gun, no matter the caliber, it's all about training and shot placement. Now, don't get me wrong. Larger guns, larger calibers, of course, can do more devastation and damage, but if that's what you got, make sure you practice with what you have. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to get shot with a spitball, okay, let alone a .25 auto. So as long as you know what you're doing with it, how to handle it, and shot placement, you're going to have some results that should either stop the individual or permanently put him out of commission. So check it out. And these stories came out of the May 1962 issue of the American Rifleman, and I did that on purpose because I knew back then the guns of favor were 25s and 32s, and they did just as good a job in most cases. So there you go. That was 4 stories of self-defense in true life and real life, and learn what you can from those stories. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before the first break, we've come up to the opinion section, my opinion piece here, and this is going to be interesting. I titled my opinion piece, "Am I Obnoxious If I Know What I Want?" Ladies and gentlemen, I know what I want, how I want it, and when I want it. But I also know that I can't always get what I want. Now, when I say I want something, it's not just a sudden whim. It's a well-thought-out process. I think that's where the trouble lies when people get offended, rubbed wrong, or look at me as a cocky, arrogant SOB. When I want something, it's mostly due to a need that I have or a supplement to what I already have to make life easier or more enjoyable. I see a need or a want for myself or for the family or the household or whatever, and that starts my process of searching for what might fill that need. When I do find something, I compare it to others that I've seen for quality, price, accessibility, and overall good ratings. So when the time comes and the decision is made by me to get the product or service, I go to places where I may be able to find it. I ask for and describe what I want to someone who has never seen me before or knows what I want until that moment. And this is where the trouble starts. My attitude is if I go to ABC company that sells ABC things and I ask for a B out of the A, B, and C, the people working there should know what B is. They should know what B is and not try to sell me an A or a C. I want the B product. And no, it's not okay if A and C products are kind of like item B. I want item B. So stop trying to pass off on to me a product or service I don't want. Because remember, I know what I want, how I want it, and when I want it. So is that being obnoxious or is that just being frustrated due to poor service? It's probably more impatient than being obnoxious. Some may say it's both. But to those I say, get your own radio show and then you can tell people yourself. Right now, it's me on the airwaves, and it's my opinion. But for the sake of good radio, I'll open up the phone lines to hear what you think and have to say. Are you a know-what-you-want kind of person, or are you the type that just gets walked on? So give me a call, 254-697-6633, and we'll hear what you have to say. Until then, Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson, and we're going to go over, I think, common law marriages, the ups and downs, pros and cons of being in that situation. So we'll see you on the other side.
Texas, a friend with a helping hand. When you want to ensure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Is your insurance company taking too big a bite out of your apple? When you're shopping for property insurance, think about coverage, service, and price. Make sure you're getting the most for your money. When you compare apples to apples, you'll see that Germania Insurance delivers outstanding value. Competitive rates, flexible payment options, and discounts. Plus, Germania offers 24/7 customer claim service. Trusted by Texans since 1896. Don't give up service or sacrifice coverage. Compare apples to apples, then choose the outstanding value offered by Germania Insurance.
So when you want to ensure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Call 697-4683 for Sharon Ruback, representative of Ruback Insurance and Germania Farm Mutual Companies.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and zero-turn big dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. 4417.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MISO-FIRM.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. To my left, I have attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross.
Public Watson. Enemy number one.
You kind of look like it on that.
Man, tell you what.
On that DVD I got, you got, what's his name there? Public Enemy number one. He's kind of looking like you, or you're looking like him, so that's pretty good. Got all this fan mail. I haven't brought to you these duffel bags of mail, fan mail yet. Remember all those bags I gave you before? I just stopped doing it. I got a warehouse now, and it's stacked bottom to top, left to right, full of duffel bags.
Watch. Save the watch. Getting deep in here.
All right, now, Ross, a couple weeks ago, was it a couple weeks ago, Trey, we did the, where we lost it? Okay, it was a couple weeks ago, we had you in here doing common law marriage, okay? And it was an incredibly fantastic segment. Bad news. We had technical problems. I lost it on the video, and I lost it on the recording. Okay, and I had lots of people asking me questions and say, "What? You can do what?"
Yeah, I did too.
And so what we're going to try to do is recreate that and maybe throw in some other things we had talked about after the show that you might want to throw in there. We're going to go all over the map here. And also, I've got an article here. It's no big deal. I just saw this. It says law enforcement agencies turning to drones to fight crime. And I just thought immediate privacy concerns. How are you going to use a drone flying over an area without invading somebody's privacy? And doesn't that lead to, if an officer sees something weird within the confines of a backyard and they don't like it, they can come and knock on the door and say, "Hey, you're in trouble because you were doing something"?
Open fields doctrine.
I don't know. What is it?
If it's in a backyard, we've got the curtilage, what we call the curtilage issue. And then you've got state law saying that maybe not the U.S., but in Texas, right, the home starts at the front gate. So, I mean, it's a...
So could they ever do that? And if they did do that, could they lose in court? If they saw something, they were looking after somebody else, and in the process of scanning somebody with a drone, they happen to see somebody doing something weird in the backyard of a house that wasn't even intended. Can they do anything about that?
So there's all kinds of cases about technology being used by law enforcement to spy on the citizenry. Okay, and the police generally are allowed to do anything that a private person could do. Okay? And they can't go above and beyond what a private person could not do.
So in other words, I'd be a peeping Tom if I had a drone looking in your backyard.
Probably there's going to be some issues there. If we're talking about, hey, we're doing a scan over, just we're not targeting certain people,
like mapping,
yeah, and you happen to see something, okay, that'd probably be a different issue. All right, but
now I can understand if somebody's hacking somebody to pieces with a machete. Yeah, I get it. Okay, but you know,
what's the difference?
Well, there's a little difference there, don't you?
If
think?
It's a violation of privacy, it's a violation of privacy.
Now that's weird. I mean, everybody would agree that, oh my God, if you're seeing a murder take place. But then again, I'd have to say to myself, okay, if you see some other type of crime taking place, I get that. I get it both ways, which makes it very complexing.
It's a lot of why we haven't even started on common law marriage yet. there's a lot of reason why I don't agree with these advocates. My favorite professor, he's awesome, Professor Jeffrey Korn, okay, been in the criminal law business for a long time as a very decorated prosecutor in the military, is now a decorated a law professor. We actually talk on Facebook about issues. We go back and forth. He helps me a little bit. I give him some new topics, uh-huh, right, to debate. His camp, right, I shouldn't say that, maybe he's changed his viewpoint, but there are some in a camp that want to do away with the Fourth Amendment completely, right, as far as the exclusionary rule is concerned. And what the exclusionary rule does, if you remember, is it excludes, okay, evidence that's obtained in violation, okay, of the Fourth Amendment. And the Fourth Amendment is the privacy provision, is what protects our privacy, okay, because that's what protects our person, our liberty, letting us be free, okay, from unreasonable searches and seizures, which is what we're talking about here.
So what's more important, the constitutional right, or if you see something happening, and I'm going to fall back to the Constitution because you got to preserve it, and otherwise if I didn't, I'd be a hypocrite.
Well, that's what you're saying, though. You're saying that chopping...
No, but then I caught myself and I said, no, wait a minute, because...
You just said you didn't understand. No,
before you say that I said something, I didn't say this. This is what I said. Well, you would think that if somebody's hacking somebody and it's murdering, but then I go, well, wait a minute, then any other type of crime, could be done the same way. And then I say to myself, now if I put that on the scale of Constitution and keep it pure, and then doing that, I have to weigh out to the Constitution.
Exactly. And so, there is at least another spectrum, right, or group, a smaller group within the camp that would say do away with the exclusionary rule, that would be satisfied to keep the exclusionary rule, but to lessen the effects of it on serious crimes, which is what you're saying. Like, so, like, they would say, like, in a child rape situation, mm-hmm. or in a murder type situation, or in, bombing terroristic,
some type probably, of heinous crime.
Yeah, heinous crime, right? To either do away with it, or, right, to make us more set of standards that would allow courts to enter this evidence, unless it was just like willful misconduct on the police standpoint. Okay?
I think I know what you're saying. So, like, in other words, you maintain the Constitution, but you got that loophole in case it's one of those heinous crimes.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So you maintain privacy and exclude evidence, which is the exclusionary rule. Okay, and so that other camp would say that the exclusionary rule, the Fourth Amendment does not have an exclusionary rule. It just protects our liberty. It doesn't actually say anything about excluding evidence. There's nothing in the language. Okay. There's nothing in the Constitution. Well, that's true. That's true. But, if there's no exclusionary rule, there's no teeth.
You know, there wouldn't be any problem here if we never saw case after case after case of government, law enforcement, exceeding their boundaries, and then all of a sudden there becomes this suspicion from the citizenry what's actually going on.
Again, I can't tell you how many times, like, I've said on the show, I just feel like that's why there's just so much turmoil out there. We have so many more laws on the books that impossible is a strong word, but it's very easy, very simple, right? Hell, I broke three laws on the way here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that so they can get you one way or another, right?
Okay, you know, and so and then we have this, I think, overzealous kind of attitude that, you know, I need to intrude. Where I think it's just gotten more that way. I asked
somebody in a position of power when it came to law enforcement if they saw, I'm not going to say names, if they saw a wall between the citizenry and the citizens wearing a badge. And they said, not at all. I said, well, I think you're living blind because it's way there, because I talked to a whole bunch of people and everybody, or not everybody, but a large group of people are very suspicious of government and law enforcement, and I blame it 90% on the media, because lots of people like to be informed, but they're listening to the wrong types of information, and the media has an agenda, and they're pushing this thing, and people get tainted because they're watching bullet points, or they get to only see the terrible, terrible things that happens, because day after day after day, there's tons of acts from law enforcement that is nothing but good and stupendous from people who are doing a job In a great manner.
I'm not going to shy away from the fact that the media definitely has an influence on this thing, but I can tell you that that's not the only influence. You cannot deny that there are more laws created every day.
No, I won't deny it.
And you cannot deny that our privacy, right, is more open to scrutiny today than it has ever been in the history of the world.
I won't deny that either.
And so, I mean, I think that there is more intrusion going on today, and the people feel that and almost feel trapped. And I think that this does leave, and then you got the media just throwing gasoline
on it,
okay?
Napalm,
and that leads to this animosity, this suspicious, right, attitude from both sides. Like, this side is suspicious of this side, and this side is suspicious of this side. Mm-hmm. Well, being suspicious of this side is just pissing this side off or making this side feel a little more uncomfortable. It just grows from there. And so that's what I was going to say. Like, I have no problem with law enforcement because I deal with these guys every day. Right? And so when they stop me, you know, I could probably be doing something wrong and still really not care as much. In other words, all I'm saying is when they stop me, I'm not nervous.
I'm not nervous either.
And I'm not suspicious.
I don't want to get a bad impression here. What I'm trying to, let me use an analogy.
I'm not a bad impression.
No.
I don't think it's a bad, what I'm trying to get at.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. I want to give an example of what I'm talking about when it comes to this. I look at the Constitution as the main thing. And in driver ed, there's three zones. I was taught there's three zones when you're coming up to a stoplight. The green zone is you stop at a comfortable stop because, you know, you're noticing the traffic light, you got a long distance away, you saw it turning yellow and red, so you have a comfortable stop. The yellow zone is the light turned yellow, so you make a little bit more, you know, quicker stop. And the red zone is like, oh my gosh, I'm going to pass the white line, or do I just run it and get out of the intersection? I think when it comes to the Fourth Amendment and other things about the Constitution, we're in the red zone. That's why it is so aggressive, so passionate with people, because we're screeching to a halt before we cross that red line, as compared to if some things happen about the Constitution that were in the green zone, okay, we have a conversation about it. But I think a lot of these instances are in our red zone, and that's why we're getting so aggressive.
And the courts have made so many exceptions. Well, it doesn't apply here. Well, it doesn't apply here. Well, it doesn't apply here. And then, you know, when the government's supposed to have the burden to prove one of those exceptions exists, the courts really don't make them prove it.
And I think the majority of the people with common sense look at the judgment and say, where did that come from? What do these judges come up with these, it doesn't apply here, it doesn't apply here, where in the common sense of the rest of the citizenry, we go, what are you doing? That makes no sense what you're doing. It goes against common sense.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm trying to tell you. So everybody okay, feels like, what's the use? What's the point? If the Constitution's not going to protect me, I'm going to protect myself. And then we have a clash.
Yes.
Okay? And so that's the whole point of the Constitution, which is why we had the Revolution, which is why we had animosity between government officials and citizens. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think that it's definitely, obviously, not that bad. And so I say the history of the world probably it's not the most invasive that it's been in the history of the world. But you understand my point as far as like being open. A lot of our thoughts are put down in a phone, okay, mm-hmm. and not expected to be made available to anybody else but ourselves. And not expected to be available to anybody else but ourselves.
Yeah, I look at the phone as an extension to my brain.
Right.
It's my personal thoughts.
And they didn't have that, you know, even when they had all of these really oppressive governments, they didn't have that kind of technology. Mm-hmm. So your thoughts, you know, were still your own. Okay, your thoughts were still your own in your own brain.
Right.
And you could release them whether you wanted to or not. And now, you know, we have people hacking our thoughts. And so That's what I meant. We're more vulnerable, I think, today than a lot of times we've ever been. Obviously, we don't have to put them on the phone, but people don't. I mean, that's not how people are geared. We don't. I don't think the common person out there is thinking, "Oh, don't write down my thoughts on my phone."
No, they're not thinking that at all.
No, they're just hell. They just, yeah. And especially not, you know, teenagers from you know 15 to 25.
I mean, they should be taught to think a little bit further down the road, like some of these teenagers who put some weird stuff on social media and then
exactly.
They come to get a job and then the people look at it.
But I'll tell you what, listening.
I'm going to be talking to Hugh Shine later today, and I'm going to be bringing up some of the governor's points on how to protect schools and that kind of stuff. And there was one thing about social media, how they're going to have people checking out people's social media just to see if we've got any nutcases, because what was it? Cruz was actually saying on social media that what he's going to do. So we need to watch for people like that. But that's a sidebar note. We got about 20 minutes. Do you want to start talking common law marriage, or are we still on a roll here?
I kind of like where we're going.
Take it away, brother.
I mean, we could.
And I'll tell you what, everybody, if you got a question, if you're dating somebody or in a situation where you're in common law and you're like biting your nails because you're like, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into and what are the repercussions of it? Give us a call, 254-697-6633.
Well, I think we can make a segue, right? We spoke about how the Fourth Amendment protects unreasonable searches and seizures. The Supreme Court came out with a ruling I completely disagree with. I mean, it just makes me it irks me every time that I think about this. And the Texas Supreme Court said the Fourth Amendment does not apply to asset forfeiture. And no, absolutely not. I disagree with this ruling. They tried to go into all this depth, in-depth stuff about it, right? There's no, there's nothing in the Fourth Amendment that says it only applies to criminal cases. Okay, unlike the Fifth Amendment that talks about it being, right, that has obvious, right, implications for a criminal case. The Fourth Amendment does not talk about criminal, it doesn't talk about it has to be applied to criminal cases. It doesn't give that implication. And we know that the founding fathers were concerned about, like, tax warrants. Okay, there were things, there were other warrants, the general warrants, there were administrative warrants, there were civil warrants that the founding fathers absolutely despised. Absolutely despised. I mean, this was the thing that they hated. They hated these government officials putting down on a piece of paper and targeting people who spoke out against the government, targeting people who were unfavorable to their cause. They targeted the people in other camps, right? Political viewpoints. Mm-hmm. Okay, they used these things as harassment tools. They used these things to put people in prison. Yes. Okay, but they also use it just as harassment. I mean, you
would, like an IRS audit today, right? The way they do it to people to shut you up.
It takes you back. What was the lady's name again? I can't. You know what I'm talking about?
What, and, the cook, and, the
yeah, they were, and they were targeting the Tea Party, right? And it absolutely applied to civil cases, and the United States Supreme Court has said this. I mean, they apply in administrative cases, they apply in civil cases, right, to administrative agencies. Why would it not apply to asset forfeiture? And they say that, well, it's in the statute. It's a statutory thing, blah, blah, blah. I disagree. I could go on and on and on about this.
So let me ask you a question.
Hold on. And so to go to common law marriage, we said that if you are a wife, okay, if you've got one spouse.
Wait, if you're a wife, a wife with marriage certificate or a common law marriage?
Yeah, I said wife, and I tried to be more politically correct. It didn't have the effect.
Okay.
Okay, scratch wife. Okay, if you're a spouse, okay, right, and your other spouse goes out and is dealing dope, okay, that can put your property, okay, in jeopardy.
Seizure.
Of being seized by the police. And you don't even get to challenge that with a constitutional right.
Why? Where does this come from? I know it's there. I know it happens. But how do they get that across as being okay?
The Supreme Court said it was statutory. We got to follow the statutory rules.
Well, here comes that question I was going to ask you. These guys, these judges are reading information, and you're reading the same information. How do we come up with two different opinions? You're totally opposed, and they're saying it's okay. Is it supposedly because they're the gods up there on the chairs with the robes, and whatever they say goes with an opinion? Or do they come down with this answer based on facts that you both read out of the same articles?
I was in court all day Friday arguing about whether the word grandparent, included every degree of relationship of other grandparents, such as great grandparents, great great grandparents, great 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 grandparents. Okay, there's always something to argue about. Okay, and even when the law was to say a parent of the child, which I feel like it's pretty much impossible to assume that it means anything else than a grandparent. A great lawyer on the other side was able to make a case that this includes great grandparents, great great grandparents, and any other kind of great 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 great.
It technically should have said the parent of a parent and all other parents after that point to clarify what you just said, as because when you say a parent of a parent, that's the grandparent.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, which was my point. Yes, I won. But there's a great lawyer on the other side, okay, that was able to make a case that a parent of the child, right, meant more than a great, I mean, excuse me, meant more than a grandparent.
I don't want to waste the time trying to explain that, but how the heck do they do that?
I know lawyers like that would be dangerous car salesmen.
Three wheels? What do you mean it doesn't run right? No, that's good. That's trendy, man.
That's it. Oh, man. And so, yeah, and that was a fun case.
All right. Anyway, let's simplify this, man. Let's simplify this because we're getting deep. The first thing we talked about the drones, that was cool, but this can get so deep. Okay, let's break it down in a simple term.
It's kind of neat.
What's common law? How can it screw you? How is it beneficial, if at all? And, you know, because I know there's a lot of people out there dating, if they're dating for one time, like you said.
Okay, so yeah. So let's talk about what common law marriage is, okay? Cohabitating, representing that you're married, in intent to be married, an agreement to be married, okay? Representing to others that you're married.
Via Facebook or social media saying, yeah, we're together. Is that what you were saying last time?
Something like that. Okay. And then cohabitation. So an agreement, a representation, and a cohabitation.
Do you need all three or just one of three?
You need all three.
You need all three. Okay.
I hope so. God. So I get drunk one night and I say, yeah, it's my wife right here. Never seen her before in my life. Now we're married. Oh, shit. Okay. We got an intent is part of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
We got an interpret the contract. Okay? This is like a contract, just like anything like that, if there's an agreement. So we're going to interpret it that way. There's got to be an intent. All right? That's what I was trying to say. If, you know, I'm drunk at Bob's, okay, and I see some really hot chick, or maybe, you know, it depends on what time
whatever,
it is.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay. And so it depends on what time it is, but hey. And then I say, oh, this is my wife, okay? And, you know, there's no intent. There's no intent from either party. There's no agreement. All right, it's just a representation by me and only me, okay?
I got to write this down, man. Not for me. I know people are going to ask because they asked me last time we were talking. So you said the three things were what? Intent?
It's an agreement.
Agreement.
A representation. And cohabitation.
Okay.
But in every agreement, right, there's got to be this intent. You got to intend to agree. You've got to have some kind of, you know, mental understanding of the agreement. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Whether an actual intent, you know, I don't know maybe what that might be construed as. But you get what I'm saying. There's got to be this knowingly, voluntarily, right, entering of an agreement. We have to want to be doing this, okay?
If you go to college, I've seen this many times, and you go down to the local bar or knickknack store, they sell weekend marriage certificates, okay? So you're good to go for the marriage. If you sign something like that, does that, like, really mess you up? It says starting Friday night to Monday, 12:01, you're married. After that, all bets off.
Okay, well, there's no common law divorce. Okay, so it's not... So there's no informal divorce. Yes, you can be informally married, but once you're informally married, you have to get formally divorced. Okay, so it's not like you can just say, oh, we're married today. We're not married the next day. Now,
I just heard a collective gulp from a lot of college guys.
So just continuing along that line, if you were common law married and then you separated and then you got real married, does that make you a legal bigamist?
Yes. You could not. The second marriage would be void.
You know, in this day and age, I accept that as a valid question.
That's
the second marriage would actually be void. It would not exist. You would be able to have that marriage declared void because it could not have been done.
And of course, this only comes up if the marriage goes to pot and you get a divorce and his lawyers involved. And you say, you see this one, you see that one. This one doesn't apply, right? Otherwise, nobody would even know the difference.
There's a great United States Supreme Court case, Reynolds. Reynolds is the. It was about the fanatical Latter-day Saint group. I think the fundamental FLSDS. Yes. Okay, I said fanatical. So if you guys are anybody out there,
was that a Freudian slip?
Offensive? Excuse me. I meant fundamental. that group, so there's all kinds of constitutional arguments whether or not, you know, we should have polygamy, and I don't want to get into that. It's a very fun debate, in my opinion, to have. It's not so straightforward. It's not, polygamy's messed up. What's wrong? Well, there's some cool little quirks that can happen, right? This is one of them. And, you know, it would be void. They would try to, you could possibly, that would be a crime as well.
What, in the most general sense, the most common sense, does common law marriage happen almost unknowingly to the people? For example, you got two 18-year-olds or 17-year-olds, because that's about legal age, right? Two 17-year-olds who are digging each other and they're doing each other and they're just, they're,
Yeah, like, if you guys are living together, okay, and I'd be real careful about putting wifey on Facebook, okay, unless you're intending to be married. And we spoke about, I think, last time, I'm not going to go as in-depth as I did last time, but we spoke about the debts.
Okay? That's a big thing, though, man. That's what people were asking about. Are you mean to tell me I'm liable for their debt?
Yes, okay, so if there's this huge debt, and you guys go and get married, your community property could be liable, right, for any debts that were incurred before, I'll say this one more time, before or during marriage.
You're emphasizing this is because last time you said if you went into a marriage and you got your property, they got their property, your property is your property, their property is their property, except this massive amount of debt.
Well, I don't want to construe it to mean that your separate property is liable for their debts that were incurred before marriage, but your community property.
But the private property of the debt going to school, for example, and you got this college debt was your property. But now that when you get married, that college debt actually becomes community property.
The college debt becomes community property.
I don't understand how that works. I know it works, but I don't understand why.
Or it doesn't become community property in the sense that that debt can follow you forever, even after you're divorced. But that debt in and of itself can make your community property liable. So let's look at it this way. Like the example I gave last time. This girl's really cute. Okay, you guys been dating a month. All right, and your dad tells you it's too early. You don't really know everything about her. You haven't even done an investigative background check with Lone Star, right? Investigative services over there, Benton Watson's office. Okay, and you really need to go do this, all right? And you're like, no, Dad, she's awesome, man. She's so great. I'm in love with her, yeah. Dude. And so, like, your dad's like, well, don't marry, okay, until you find this out. And you're like, Dad, we went to Vegas last weekend. We got married last weekend. Okay, and she's like, I got a ring, and you got the Cracker Jack box ring, okay? And so, like, and you're broke. You're a teenager, young, dumb, and broke in that song now. Your dad's like, okay, well, be careful because there's this debt. And you go, well, man, we just bought this house. We just bought this house. Like, we're moving in. We're moving in next week. And so it goes good for like a month, right? And then you find out, oh, she tried to go to medical school and, you know, went all the way through, you know, till it got time to residency. And then she just dropped out because she had a mental breakdown. All right, because she was on dope, and because she lost her kids to CPS, because all this other stuff happened, okay? And you realize, like, so there's, like, this $250,000 debt out there, right? You've got drug problems and forfeiture judgments on file with the state. You've got restitution judgments from her probation that she hasn't paid. Okay, and you've got lawyer's fees that you're going to have to owe because her motion to revoke her probation for not paying restitution's coming up, okay? And you're thinking, crap. Okay, and obviously, right? I'm exaggerating. Not many things, but
not all the time. No, there's a lot of.
You stuff think like this that. Hasn't happened?
Exactly.
I can't say any names, but I can tell you this kind of thing happens. Okay, and so this scenario is extreme, but the college debt situation is very, extremely common. Okay, it is extremely common.
Common because it's extremely common that everybody's got college debt and they can't seem to get a job to pay it off.
Yes, or I shouldn't have said college debt. You've got credit card debt and that's what I mean by college debt, like debts that these people are incurring like during college, because college kids do dumb things. And I did too. We tend to get low on money. Well, I'm gonna go open up a credit card. Right, and charge a bunch of stuff, and then you can't pay that, and the interest bills, yada yada yada. Mm. Okay, that happens a lot, and that's really what I'm referring to, and we've got other times, you know, that people get into an accident or something, and they've got a bunch of past medical bills. Okay, you've got maybe you got somebody that's got a bunch of creditors and judgments against. They got bad credit. Okay, some of that may affect you, some of it may not. But you need to be aware that community property, what comes with the marriage, it's not just like a clean slate going forward.
Let me ask you this. Without taking the romance, the passion, the excitement, and the spontaneity out of a relationship, what would you say is a good way to maybe go into? You want to take that, see who it is?
Well, do you want to take it?
Yeah, let's take it, see who it is. That was it. You are on the Aaron's High Cabin Adventure Radio program. Who do we have calling in? And thank you for calling. I can't hear.
Oh, no, I think I called the wrong time. Thank you.
Well, do you have any opinion on common law marriage?
Oh, yes, sir, I do.
Well, tell me what you think.
It's best to get married.
Exactly.
I was in a common law relationship for a long time. It's best to get married. If you're common law married, you might as well go ahead and do it right with the Lord. That's the only way for you to get your blessing.
Well, when you were in a common law marriage and you got out of it, was there any problems that came out of that?
No, I didn't have no problems, but I didn't find out that when you're common law married, it's just like you're married. It's so many things that, you know, that the law is the same thing, like what you can and what you can't do. It's the same thing. That's why, in my opinion, I say go ahead and get married, because it's the same. If you decide to leave that person, if that person want to take something or do something, they have that right to do it, male or female.
Do you think?
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Do you think the common law marriage concept idea is people thinking they can get out of it a lot easier than actually being married?
Yes. But, and it's not.
And it's not. Wow. This is a great call. I'm glad you accidentally called us. All right, man. Well, you keep listening to us, okay?
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good. Maybe it gives me some credibility in what I'm saying there. So, I mean.
But what my question to you is, without taking all that out, the spontaneity, the romance, the passion, how would you look about going into it if you're not actually ready to get married?
I mean, but I don't want to seem like it's always better to do it this way. There are the times that it may be helpful to be in a common law marriage for the sake of asset protection.
Yeah, but I'm confused, because asset protection, yeah. Almost, I thought you said, is kind of bad in common law.
But there's this ambiguity or ambiguity, right? When the creditors don't know who the wife is and isn't. Okay, and so I'm not going to go into those tactics, okay? The asset protection strategies, and so to speak, I don't mean committing fraud on your creditors. I mean legitimate asset protection. Things that already you own that you protect via certain estate planning and business planning strategies, along with your marriage relationship.
Would you consider yourself a financial marriage planner, counselor?
A marriage? Oh.
A financial marriage counselor?
The best thing about me is I'm not married.
Uh-oh. Hope nobody's listening. But
she'll say the same thing. Yeah, she'll say the same thing. Okay, and And so she said, man, I'm not married to that guy. Okay. Yes, yeah, that's what I do. We do business planning, estate planning, for sure, absolutely.
I think that's very vital, everybody. You need to check Ross out here. Ross, I'll tell you what, the clock's a ticking here before we get to the point where we can't do it.
We're not even to the meat and potatoes yet.
I know, we could do a whole hour on this thing, but I got other people coming on. So why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you, what services you provide, and if we have a second or two left.
You got to know this, cohabitate. Remember I said this? One night. We got a court case saying all you got to do is stay there one night.
I know, but in most cases, don't they say it lasts 15 minutes?
Man.
Wow. Does that count?
Oh, yeah. Hey, so, you know, or not even that. You know, we just got to, it's just got to be cohabitate. Whatever period of time cohabitate means is a fact question, okay? And so is the representation and whether or not you had the intent. We talked about the IRS statements. Be careful. Okay, you've had to have judges understand that everybody likes to lie to the IRS so that it could very well be a lie. But, you know, also, you've just got to be careful about what you're representing your wife to be. Like we said, wifey on Facebook. It's all a fact question. So you just got to be careful, like the lady said, because just because you can get into it formally doesn't mean you can get, or into it informally doesn't mean you can get out of it informally.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this segment is sponsored by Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Super Attorney Rick Dodd, good friends with him. He's one of the blessings to the show. He keeps it on the air, and it allows a venue for Ross here to give us some excellent legal advice and comment.
That's why Rick's not on the show today. He's always referring these kind of cases to me and Michelle Lemkiel at Rock Show. Because he doesn't want to deal with these. But, so these were the fun ones. I appreciate Rick and them, you guys having me on.
Well, tell
so it's always
they,
fun.
Tell everybody how they get a hold of you.
My office, 105 East Main here in Cameron. McMilk Cow, we got to keep the tradition. And so, also, you can email me if you have any questions. We've talked about, again, if you... We love having questions because it helps us figure stuff out, and we love trying to figure stuff out. Right. Leave your phone number. Please, again, leave your phone number when you email. So my email is benton@watson.legal. That's benton@watson.legal. And, again, you can call me at 254-605-4140. That's 254-605-4140.
Now, Ross, I'm artistic in nature, and when you said the milk cow on the side of the building, if you want to make that a 3D picture, get a roll of hay, put it right in front, and give you a 3D image of that cow on the wall. So try it out. You'll like it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. Give me one commercial break, and then we're going right into Janae. Delicious Janae Goodman. We're going to be talking about dehydration. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Everybody. everybody. The Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's June 9th, 2018, and the delicious Janae Goodman could not be with us this week, so we're going to replay one of her segments on dehydration. So, Trey, let's go ahead. Let's get the delicious Janae Goodman. Tell us what she's got.
Hello, my lovelies. I've got a special request to fill for today's topic, so I want to share the ins and outs of food preservation. Hopefully, this isn't a dry segment. Not even a chuckle? Ouch! So, whether you're looking back on waste and spoilage, or you need a new hobby, or you're gearing up for World War III, I've got you covered. I'm Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. So, I want to put this in perspective for you. The first refrigerator wasn't available for home use until about the 1900s. So how did our ancestors store their food? Well, it's easy to guess that they used snow during the colder seasons, but what about those areas with warmer weather or areas that didn't have snow at all? Well, unless they wanted to starve or eat spoiled foods, they had to find a way to do it, and they had to find a way to make it last quick. Preservation is the act of increasing a food's shelf life by limiting the growth of harmful bacteria and microorganisms. And some of the earliest versions of go back to about 12,000 BC. Some methods include drying or dehydration, canning, smoking, pickling, salting, and freezing. Many of us already know about freezing everyday items, and they can last for about a year. So I'll focus more on the other methods for the next couple of weeks. Today, I want to talk solely about drying and dehydration. I feel like this is the easiest of the methods to work with, so we'll call this beginner territory. To dehydrate something is to remove the moisture from it. This can be achieved by hanging a product, exposing it to a low heat for a really long time, or by using a dehydrator. I understand that a dehydrator may not be the most financially available thing, and that's okay. Your oven will work just as well, you just have to keep an eye on your food. For one of the earliest examples of drying that I can think of is seed saving. Keep in mind that there wasn't an abundance of grocery stores or vehicles back then, so people had to live off of the land and they ate what they could find. Once they found produce items, these seeds were dried and saved for next year's planting season. Because of this, early civilizations didn't have to hunt for their fruits and vegetables every year. They simply used the seeds that they had from their previous harvest. This practice actually led to some of the first gardens. If you choose to practice seed saving at home, make sure that you rinse and dry your seeds and store them in a cool, dry place. If stored improperly, your seeds can become moldy. Once you have an established garden, you can save your seeds and you don't have to worry about buying new ones. Seeds aren't the only thing that you can dry either. Herbs can be hung and dried after being rinsed, and they can be pat dry and used with a napkin to make sure that they don't cause any mold. Once they're dried, you can keep them in small jars and ground them down when you're ready to use them. This drying process usually takes about a week. Dehydration can be achieved by salting an item as well. Salt naturally draws out the moisture, therefore making your items less susceptible to microorganisms and harmful bacteria. I imagine that salting was handy as far as adding flavors to foods that were being preserved as well. Typically, you'll see this method with fish and some meats, pork being a popular option here. I'm going to give you a helpful tip as well. If you're using a salted product, be sure that you rinse the salt off and dry it before you utilize it. That salt can transfer into your food. The top request I get is how to make jerky. I've actually never made my own jerky before, so I wanted to try out the process before I shared it with you guys. This week, I took the time to do just that. So I took a different couple of cuts of meat to see if there was a favorable one. They're all flavorful. I used a flake steak and a top round steak, and they were both marinated with the same spices, and I cut them in two ways. I did one against the grain and one with the grain. So here's what that means. Your meats have a natural fiber in them, and it looks kind of like strings. So when you cut with that pattern, it makes for a chewier product. And when you cut against that pattern, it makes it a little easier to digest. So if you're using against the grain, that'll be for something that you want just as a quick snack. And with the grain will be more for those head jerking jerky eaters, the people who really like to pull back and eat their jerky. So I did mine both ways just to see if I liked one more than the other. But whenever you're cutting your meat, what I would suggest, instead of cutting straight down with your product, angle your knife and slice this way. That way you have a kind of a thicker product instead of just going straight down. For my meat, I used about 1/4 of a cup of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon of honey, 1/2 a tablespoon of red pepper flakes, and 1 teaspoon each of onion powder, garlic powder, and black pepper. First, you'll want to pound out the protein if you're not using a thinner cut of meat. And this is to ensure that you have not too thick of a product. Next, cut that meat into even strips. And as mentioned before, it can be done against or with a grain. And then put your sliced meat into a Ziploc bag along with your marinade. Let this sit in your fridge for about 2 to 3 hours or overnight. When you're ready to dehydrate your product, preheat your oven to about 175 degrees Fahrenheit and dry those strips with a paper towel. Lay them out on a wire rack and put that wire rack above a sheet tray that is covered with foil in order to catch your oil. Don't let the strips touch. You'll let that dry for about anywhere from 2 to 5 hours in your oven. I did mine for about 3 hours, and honestly, I feel like I could have even gone longer than that. So next time, I think I'll be keeping a closer eye on removing that fat. So this fat here, that globule that you see, can actually lead to the rancidity of your product. So I'll be sure to get more of that out next time. And of course, like I said, keeping it in the oven longer as well. The jerky tastes great. I got a comment from the guys here at the station, but I do feel like it's still rather moist. So Trey actually recommended that I get a desiccant, which is something that draws out moisture for your product as you're keeping it. So I hope that I've given you plenty of tips and tricks to store for your own use down the road. And be sure to join me next week, if you can, to talk about all the other preservation methods. As always, be sure to drop a line at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. And until next time, stay hungry, my friends.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. It is now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Boy, isn't it a warm, nice, beautiful day today? That sun's shining, and the good part is it's only 8 weeks to the start of football camps all around the NFL. Hey, today I'm going to be doing something that, you know, I had some incidents happen this week. And some issues I was working on with my new little job I have, and I came across some things that were really disturbing to me. And I've often talked about domestic violence and the results of it over the last few years, but that is exactly what I've talked about only on the adult side, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, adults are adults; they can make their own minds up, but we have children, and children sometimes are the victims, they're the prophets of what happens, what they see, what they're treated. You know, society many times concerns itself with the adult portion of family relationships. Many times no one addresses the most serious of all family domestic situations, with that being abuse of children. You know, many times this is referred to as a silent epidemic. You know, child abuse in this country has exploded in pandemic proportions. You see it on the news. I believe yesterday it was up in Corio County, where a man, I think he was in his 20s, maybe early 30s, he raped and killed a 2-year-old child And, you know, the family agreed to have him spend the rest of his life in jail without the possibility of parole. You know, how many times does that happen and we not hear about it? How many times does that happen and the child is in the, ends up being the victim of something or society or some kind of political system? You know, the people who are mainly responsible for investigating these heinous of all crimes simply can't keep up with the amount of reports which flood their phone every day. Just can't do it. Not making excuses for anyone, but when the state budget is cut many times over and the protective services, whether it's the adult protective services or the child, take hits in their manpower, it's just impossible for anybody to keep up with the demand. You know, everyone is responsible for preventing child abuse. I don't care if you're a next-door neighbor. I don't care if you're a mailman. I don't care if you're a UPS driver. Everyone is responsible for it, not just the protective services, not just the police department or the sheriff's office, but every human that is aware that a child's in danger. Many times the police hear things such as, I thought something was going to be done over there, but I didn't know what to do for sure, so I didn't report it. Boy, that irritates me as a cop, as a future cop, or as a past cop. When I hear people say, I knew something wasn't right, but I just didn't want to do it. What you're telling me is you're too cotton-picking lazy to get involved. That's all it tells me. Neighbors, it's our responsibility as citizens and part of the human race to help those who can't help themselves. It takes only a fraction of time to contact a CPS hotline and less than that to report possible child abuse to a local agency. You know, I know you're probably thinking, well, I don't know for sure. Well, you know what? You don't know for sure if you're sick, but you go to the doctor to find out, don't you? So you notice something's not right. It's the same thing with things such as that. A child can't help themselves. We've got to help the children. And we had a talk here just recently, a few moments ago, about discipline and about children. You know, and so, you know, you think, I can't even discipline my own child. Yeah, you can. There's nothing in the law that says you can't discipline your child. There's things in the law that says you can't beat your child or you can't assault your child, but that butt area of a child's fair game with a good hand or a good belt. And I'll tell you what, even CPS will tell you that. Child abuse is not only physical, folks, and here's the part that really hurts. Child abuse is not only physical, but it can be just as easily be mental or verbal in nature, and all have a tendency to produce problems for the child as they grow older. The youngest of our society need our help. Law enforcement needs your help if you suspect child abuse is happening. Everyone at some time has got to have a conscience, folks. Act on that conscience and on your instinct. If you suspect neglect is happening, report it. You know, as the economy has personally been trying for people, especially over the last few years, there are a lot of jobs that are hard to find. Poverty is seen to be increasing incrementally, as does the crimes of anger and regret. You know, a frustrated dad or mom who hasn't had a job for a while, maybe the family didn't have enough money to support themselves during the process, even with the bare necessities of life of raising that child. And maybe the parents have some kind of addiction or something, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or any kind of addiction, does that matter? When you add those all things together, it becomes a prescription for outbursts of frustration. These outbursts can easily be tempered from within, but many times they aren't. The frustrations, the angry, the volley of demeaning remarks are aimed at the children or spouse. You know, and then they become the battering point. They become the punching bag or the verbal receiver of these feelings. You know, how can a man, and I'm using that word as a rhetorical sense, how can a man who considers himself a true man take his anger out on somebody that's less than powerful than him? Whether it's a female, whether it's maybe if you're in a alternative lifestyle, maybe it's your male spouse or your female spouse. You know, we've got to start having some kind of common sense in this nation where we understand that we have to control ourselves and we have to look within. Self-protection many times is not an option for the youngest and the frail folks in this society. It becomes incumbent upon society to protect those people. It becomes incumbent on you as a citizen to do your job. And I'm not here preaching at you today. That's not my point. But what I am saying is the next time I hear somebody say, well, I thought something was going on, but I didn't want to get involved, this past redheaded cop may just come out and just tell you what I think of you. I don't usually do that. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm very calm and I never say what is truly on my mind. But, folks, I have seen too many kids in the last year, especially the last couple of months in some areas I've gone in, that are obviously, absolutely obviously been the results of child abuse and neglect. The cycle of child abuse is well documented. A repeat victim of domestic or child abuse becomes the abuser in the next generation. They know no better. I mean, that's the way they were raised up. That was the way they were reared. It just has to stop, folks. And for it to change and the pattern to change for 180 degrees, that's going to mean society's got to change. We got to change. Then we have to do what we need to do to help those kids. Now, what I'm going to do is I want to look at some things that some warning signs. And a lot of people say, well, what are these warning signs? How can these warning signs be true? Well, folks, everything has a warning sign. When you're going down your highway and you're a big old pick-em-up truck and all of a sudden it starts coughing and sputtering, that's a sign that something's going wrong. If you're going down the highway and you see the E on your gas tank and the needle's always past the E, that's a sign that something's going on. Well, folks, there are signs in everything in society. Number one, if you see a kid, a neighbor, that is excessively withdrawn, fearful, or anxious about doing something wrong, think about it. How many kids cower because when they even try to do something right, their parents, their loved ones, always consider them doing something wrong? They don't get any positive reactions. They only get negative reactions. Also, look for a child that shows extreme changes in behavior, either extremely compliant or extremely demanding. Maybe a child is withdrawn or passive. I know these are sometimes signs of just a kid that is not an outward kid, but maybe has some type of inward feelings and inward conscience. But it could be, and it's our job to find that out in society. Also, if you see a child that seems like it doesn't want to be around a parent or a caregiver, it tries to stay away from them. And, if you see an adult who is obviously talking down to the kid, who is demeaning to the kid, who is basically rude to the kid, or even putting their hands on the kid, there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. I was going through Walmart here a couple of months ago, and we mentioned that because we were talking about Walmart earlier. But I was going through Walmart, and I was walking down the aisle, and there was a lady. And, Walmart, you see all kinds of people. You see things that you normally wouldn't see in society. And this young lady, and I use that word loosely, and have no problem with tattoos, but I couldn't see any skin on her. She had a pair of shorts on that I'm sure were probably underwear. And this little kid was walking down the aisle, and he was wanting a toy, and mother didn't, for whatever reason, she didn't have time for the toy. She had to pay for that beer and all the stuff that was in her cart. So she started jerking his arm. Now, folks, a spat on the butt and a jerking and twisting an arm are two different things. If you've ever seen a spiral injury or a spiral break, that's an indication that somebody has been twisting that kid around. And that's what I saw that day. And, of course, being old Randy had to say something to the lady, which made things kind of go downhill real quick. But, sometimes we have to do what we have to do. Now, there's some warning signs. Number one, if you see warning signs of physical abuse in children, number one, especially if you see a kid that's always got bruises. Maybe it's a neighbor's kid. And I know a lot of kids are clumsy. I was a clumsy kid. I'm a clumsy adult, to be honest with you. But if you see a lot of things that are kids walking down the street that's got bruises, cuts, or maybe they just seem like they're dirty all the time, that they don't have clean clothes, they don't have appropriate hygiene. Folks, that's neglect. Neglect is a form of child abuse in every respect of the word. Be on alert. Be watchful. Be have some common sense. If you can see marks on a child, here about 4 years ago, the only time I know in a modern era of my police career that I really felt like hurting somebody was that we had a case right here in this fine town we're in today, and these two children, and they were precious, precious children. They had been beaten with extension cords. They had marks all over them. They had marks on their legs, their backs. I've got had photographs of it. And every night I would look at those photographs, and it irritated me, just thinking there are other kids out there that nobody reported. Folks, if you see kids like that, be a human being. And that's all it is be a freaking human being and report things that you see. You know, if you see a kid right now, it's going to be 99 degrees today, according to the weatherman. And if you ask me, that's about 29 degrees too hot. But if you see a kid who's walking around playing outside and they've got long sleeve shirts on or long pants on, most kids don't wear that during the summertime. True, the family may not have any other clothes, but if you see that, you might want to kind of watch that child to see if they're covering up any things. You know, look for filthy clothes, look for ill-fitting clothes, look for kids, their hygiene is constantly in question. Their teeth are bad, they've always got dirt under their fingernails. You know, most parents make their kids clean up once in a while. That was Saturday night bath, so to speak. But look for things like that, folks. Now, I'm not saying that that's always the case, but children can't defend themselves. That's the bottom line. We wonder why kids do stupid things. We wonder why kids pick up a gun and they go into a school and they shoot kids. You know, I'm not saying there's no excuse for that. Absolutely no excuse for that. But sometimes society doesn't care about a child in another way. We've got to do everything we can to protect our children because they cannot protect themselves. You know, look for if you look for a child who maybe has trouble walking or maybe has trouble sitting down, especially if it's a young female child, possibly a sign of sexual abuse. You know, if you see a child that definitely tries to pull away from a parent or pull away from a grandparent, another sign that you might look at. And like I said, folks, the bottom line is this. I'm not here to implicate, to impound, to impugn, to, I could go into a lot of different adjectives, anybody in particular. But folks, you know, there's different segments of society. Sometimes we have the silent killer, or we've got the silent abuser too. Sometimes the people you think that are the pillars of the community, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. So folks, watch the kids, look out for the kids, protect the kids, and do what is right behind the kids. And, you know, I get on my high horse when I start talking about children. You know, I worked in a program called DARE for about 17 years, and I saw every form and every fashion of child abuse you could ever mention. And I get really, really irritated when it happens. So,
Chief, can I chime in on something?
Sure.
You were talking about something, and it was about watching for signs. I had linked to my Facebook page the video that Nicholas Cruz put out. I don't like to promote it, but it's also important to promote this particular one just to show the workings of the mind. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining how nobody's gonna make fun of me or pick on me or do this kind of stuff. And so we have the brewing, the making of potential people like this because we're not watching the signs, or they're being abused or neglected or made fun of or whatever. So it's very important that we pay attention to those signs, like the chief is saying here, because you never know where it can lead next. And it's awesome because in just a little bit, Hugh, if you're listening, we're going to have State Representative Hugh Shine coming on at the bottom of the hour. And he's probably going to call in a few minutes to stand by. So if you're listening, Hugh, just stand by. But he's going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about the policies of Governor Abbott that he's unveiling for the school protection because of things that happened
right.
Because of Nicholas Cruz.
You're absolutely correct. You know, and I'll go into a little personal thing here for a minute. And I know that, Trey, you'll probably have some of the same issues. You know, it's no secret. I am not what you would call a long-distance runner type physique man. I'm a big man, a very big man. And I've been big all my life. Well, growing up through school, you know, until I started playing football and could knock people on their you-know-whats, a lot of ridicule took place. And I'm sure, Trey, that you had some of those same issues, too, simply with the size. I've heard every fat joke. I've heard every heavy joke there is to hear. But, you know, when I was growing up, I could have done one of two things. I could have retaliated. I could have got even. Or I could have done the right thing and been brought up by my mother and dad's raising about what was right and what was not right to do. Unfortunately, kids today don't have those same foundations to pull on. You know, you talked about Mr. Shine coming on. I've known Hugh Shine since, man, I was a teenager. My mother used to keep his children in Emmanuel Baptist Daycare. You know, and I know that when you go to see people like that who raise their children the right way, and you see them have true, honest feelings about society and about how their kids are going to be raised, they don't allow them to ridicule. They don't allow them to do things like that. And I know I've gone over my time, and I apologize, everybody, folks, but I really get passionate when we start talking about kids and about what happens in society. So until next week, have a great week, everybody. Keep your wheels down on the ground and stay out of trouble.
Gee, appreciate you, man. Thank you very much. Trey, let's go right into Product Spotlight because I want to make sure I maximize all the time here. Okay, we're going to switch mics. Chief, once again, awesome job.
Oh, thank you.
You might want to hang tight if you're free. Ladies and gentlemen, we're this segment is sponsored by ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. Arch Kuhn's a very good friend of mine, long-term friend, long-term business. He's consistently generous, good, and professional. He's got... Yeah, when he calls, he should be calling in just a minute or so. When he calls, just answer him, have him hold. No, just have him hold on. I'm going to finish his spot first. Okay. So I'm going to be talking about the Glock 19 MOS and give it a review on it. I got this from Ammoland.com, and this is a pretty cool pistol. You know, at first, a long time ago, I wasn't really into putting optics, red dots on guns just for the reason, you know, you're a point shooter, and it's great for competitions and all that kind of stuff. What's that?
I won't be able to.
So let me continue this up. Yeah. All right. I'm going to read this review about the Glock 19. So you can go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page. You can see the short video on it. Okay. It's Glock's new pistol. I'll tell you what. Stand by. Hey, Hugh, if you're listening, just stand by. And we'll call me back. I think we got a technical problem here. So call me back in just a few minutes if you can hear me. All right. Glock's new pistols for 2016 included two of their earliest models, the G17 and the G19, updated with the MOS, the modular optic system. We looked at the Model 17 MOS on the other article. Now we're going to check out the Glock 19 MOS, a.k.a. the Glock 19 MOS pistol. Now, the holographic sights have come a long way since they first were used in IPSC 25 years ago. The new sights are lighter, more rugged, and much smaller, so much so that you can carry a pistol with a red dot in a daily duty or a concealed carry weapons holster. As with the Glock 17, we ran the Glock 19 MOS with factory sights and at least baseline that we had an accurate and reliable pistol from the start. Instead of ringing steel, we set up a paper target to see if there was a true advantage to having those sights on the gun. One really gripe with the factory MOS is that it kills your ability to run factory sights. Let me clarify this. We got a little bit of interruptions here, so let me clarify. We have a Glock pistol. They had the Glock 17, and now they have the Glock 19. And what it is, basically, I'm changing my notes. There is a cutout in the top of the slide just in front of the rear sight that when you unscrew it, you can use an adapter plate that comes with the gun at that time. And it'll fit any type of optics that you can screw onto the rear of the slide and use it as a red dot. Like you put a red dot on a rifle, well, it's a red dot on a pistol. It makes for much quicker sight acquisition. And there's pros and cons to it, in my personal opinion. I love it. I think it's great. But I just don't want to fall back to, hey, where's that red dot? Let me focus on it, as compared to just picking up the pistol and point shooting like I've taught many of people to doing. But it's a sexy looking item. It can come in very handy to those who have problems with their vision. And I want to skip right now to a review on this. It says, one of the advantages to a red dot sight that is rarely mentioned is its wonderful utility for older people with diminished near vision. I'm 58 years old and have had LASIK surgery. LASIK surgery solves for the far vision problem, so I can see the target very clearly at far distances. But LASIK doesn't correct near vision problems, so conventional sights are somewhat blurry for me, especially in context with which lighting is dim. This is true even of sights that have bright-colored large front dots, such as the Trijicon HDs, although I can see the HDs better than other sights. But with a red dot sight, I can see the dot just as clearly and crisply as if I had perfect vision. And of course, because of the LASIK surgery, I can see far off as well. So basically, a red dot sight allows me to see both the target and the sight perfectly. I recommend these sights to anyone who has trouble seeing conventional sights. Now, that's a big recommendation. A lot of people tell me they have a problem focusing the gun. So with these Glock pistols and their MOS capabilities, you're able to take off the little panel that's on top of the slide with a couple set screws there, take it off, and with the package comes four adjuster plates, depending on the sight system that you have, and you put the little tiny red dot system on the rear of your pistol, and it will fit in almost every holster, because unless you have a thumb brake holster or some of these officer holsters, these what do you call them, Chief? The retention holsters,
criminal retention
holsters. Sometimes they got two or three locks on them, so it'll fit pretty good. And they've got this gun at ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. The number is 254-983-4417. If you go to the website, this will clarify and clear it up a lot. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. You'll see the video of it. I'm going to show you the basic Glock 19 in the top of the slide. And then you'll see the Glock 19 MOS. You'll see the cutout, the two screws that hold it, and how you're able to put an actual red dot on it. So go to ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Call them up. Tell them, give me some more info on this Glock 19 MOS. They've got one on the shelf there. It's sexy. It's good. It's really a benefit to those with difficult vision of focusing on the sights and the target, and just blends it all together. It helps you out a lot. So check them out and tell them you heard it on the radio, because they support me. And without them, I couldn't stay on the air. So until next week with the product spotlight, give them a call. Go pick up yours today. What you got, Trey?
We got about a minute for Representative Shine
call. All right, then give me a break, and when we come back, we're going to have we'll just no, just play something. Play some music.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-4417.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's June 9, 2018, and we're right on time. We got the Representative Hugh Shine give us a call. Trey, put him on the line here. Let's say hi. Hugh, are you there?
I am, Matt. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your day to come on the show. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, I tell you, I'm out of town today, and I'm doing something that I have been wanting to do a long time. I'm actually walking the battlegrounds of Shiloh in the Civil War right now.
Oh, wow. That's
and really so I found me a shady spot so I could make the call, and I just would have to encourage your listeners, if you've got some Civil War buffs out there, they need to come up to Savannah, Tennessee, and see the battlegrounds of the Shiloh National Battlegrounds. It's fantastic.
That's great. I mean, I know a lot of people who are Civil War buffs, so that would be a great tip for them. Hugh, let me do the listening audience a little favor here and just give you a quick blurb as to who you are, what you're doing, and what we're about to talk about.
Okay.
Hugh Shine is a retired United States Army colonel, financial advisor, and politician. He's a Republican member of the Texas House of Representatives representing the 55th District. And he was previously served two terms in the Texas House of Representatives from 1986 to 1990. And, Hugh, you were flying Blackhawks, weren't you?
Well, I started flying Hueys, and yes, I did advance the Blackhawks and also flew the Apache.
Oh, that's great. I remember some nice conversations in your office about those helicopters. I mean, I've always had an affection for helicopters. When I was at Fort Irwin, I'd always go to the airfield and listen to them come in. I could tell what was flying in based on their blade whopping sound, you know. So anyway, Hugh, I asked you to come on because I was looking at the governor's plan to address school safety in Texas, and I know you're an extremely busy man, and I'm sure you got a general overview of what his plan is, and I thought we'd just talk about it, and you can give us some information to the best of your knowledge on certain aspects of it. And I had sent you a couple of notes that I had, so I figured we'd go off some of those notes and maybe a couple others off the plan that I actually saw. But before we do that, do you have any comment that you want to start off with that, and we can go from there?
Well, let me just say in starting, you know, the governor's issued, you know, in a press conference, issued a proposal outlining a lot of different things. We as members of the House are studying some of those things, and what I intend to do is kind of share as much as I can with listeners of what the details are, not in any way you know, endorsing any of those measures at the moment, but certainly looking at those measures. I do know there's one measure that I think is an underlying theme that definitely needs to be addressed, and that's the one of regarding mental health. And I think that may be one of the most important issues, which is included in the governor's plan, that could actually help our schools and help bring some insight into treating the problem rather than symptoms in the process.
Okay, just to clarify something, because I'm getting a little confused now. This is the plan that is proposed, or it's actually going to happen? Can you clarify that one aspect?
Oh, it's just proposed. It's a plan proposed by the governor. The legislature is not in session. The governor has no authority by executive order to implement anything that could possibly be a statutory change.
Well, based on
there may be some provisions he might be able to implement, but if it's if it requires statutory, the legislature actually has to be in session.
Well, based on what I read, it said he wanted to implement, especially for Santa Fe, the things to happen before the school year started again. So, is there any chance that that can come into play before the school year starts, or when does the session get back into play?
Say that again. He did what for Santa Fe?
He specifically said he would like certain things to happen before Santa Fe opens back up. So,
yeah. Well, one of the things that is already out there, and I supported a bill that we had in the legislature that dealt with marshals, and that was House Bill 867. And one of the plans is to improve.
You're breaking up here. You're breaking up. Stay on the mic.
The training aspect of those. The marshal has to take an 80-hour course. Generally, it'll be at their own expense. But we broadened that from public schools to include private schools, and also lowered the number of students in the school that they would have the opportunity to have marshals on their school grounds. That's one of the first things that the governor talked about in his proposal.
Yeah, I was noticing that. I was going to break down his proposal in a few different segments. It was basically like, this is what we can do before something happens. This is what we should do when it happens. And here's what we can do to harden up the place to maybe prevent it from happening at all. And you had mentioned one thing there about the mental aspect of it. It's like, what actually is the mental problem, in your opinion, Hugh? What's going on here?
Well, I don't know what the actual problem is, but I can tell you that school counselors are not trained or certified as healthcare professionals to be able to diagnose students from a mental health perspective, and that is that's one of the pieces in the governor's proposal. I will say this too: in talking with our school superintendents and principals in our schools in Bell County, they all concur that the mental health side of the proposal is probably one of the most important pieces. And I would have to agree that is a very important piece too, because that actually, in my opinion, treats the problem, or not necessarily treats the problem, it addresses the problem. And some of the other things that are in the proposal basically are addressing symptoms of the underlying problem.
Would you say culture and mental health problems go hand in hand? Because I've got an article here from the Federalist.com, and I read it, and I really dig the article because it's how I'm thinking. It's basically saying it's not the gun that's the problem. It's the culture, the upbringing, the medicines, the media, the liberal thought processes, the looseness. Would you say anything to that? Agree? Not agree?
I would have to say that certainly needs to be considered as a contributory aspect of the problem that we're dealing with. I think everything needs to be on the table. I don't think there's anything out there from a cultural standpoint personal to the core family unit, from our spiritual relationships we have in our society. All those things, I think, are all on the table that could have some impact in regards to the underlying problem.
Hugh, I was looking on the website, the Texas.gov website, and they got Governor Abbott's plan here with an opening paragraph. I want to read it and then make a comment on one point of it and see what you think about it. It says here, Governor Greg Abbott today joined state and local leaders to unveil his school and firearm safety action plan. And the reason I'm reading this, I want everybody to know what we're talking about here. The governor's plan contains 40 recommendations and includes proposals that call for increasing law enforcement presence at school, strengthening existing campus security programs, enhancing firearm safety, providing mental health evaluation, and that identifies students at risk of harming others, and much more. Now, with that comment, I want to go to one thing that is said in here that I raise a question about. It says, in addition to the actions that Governor Abbott is taking today, he will also ask Texas Senate and House leaders to issue an interim charge to consider the merits of adopting a red flag law allowing law enforcement, a family member, school employee, or a district attorney to file a petition seeking the removal of firearms from a potentially dangerous person only after legal process is duly provided. Are you familiar with that one, and how do you like that if you are?
Yeah, I've had many discussions with folks about that, and the red flag issue. You know, it's going to be very controversial. And the problem you have implementing something like that is how it will grow.
Exactly.
Okay. I think protecting our individual rights is critical. It's one of the most important things I think we as Americans have as part of our freedoms, and that's going to be extremely controversial. You're going to have those who advocate gun control who are going to embrace that in its entirety and want to take it a step further. You'll also have those who feel, as I just described, of not wanting to infringe on their Second Amendment rights or anything else, who are going to be opposed to making any changes. It will just continue to add controversy to the debate, and I don't think it's going to resolve anything. I'm really of the opinion that if we can get healthcare professionals or get counselors in our schools with the training they need to be able to, I know this is a bad word, but maybe to profile some students based on healthcare evaluations.
Well, it's not a
mental
bad
health
word on this
evaluations.
Conversation.
Well, I understand, but it is in the secular society. Okay. In many ways, that if our counselors in our schools have certifications to be able to know and understand mental health issues as it relates to students, and have the possibility of being able to profile maybe some of those students from that standpoint, I think that addresses the underlying problem that we're talking about and dealing with. I'm not going to say it's going to solve it at all, because this is a very complex issue, because it's very societal, just like you just mentioned a moment ago, cultural, mm-hmm. Spiritual, all the above. And there's not going to be any single easy answer to resolving this. But I believe the first start is getting into our schools with certifications and for mental health evaluations, and that will be, I think, foremost. Now, let me say this. As far as this issue of arming individuals in the schools, school boards already have that authority. School boards can approve arming teachers and administrators on their campuses if they so choose. And we do have some schools in Texas that have actually done that.
Yeah,
and,
but, sorry.
So there have been some other things that have been done.
Hugh, when I hear that, that's cool, but you know, it's also a joke, and I'll tell you why.
I understand.
They're not doing what it takes. It takes a sheepdog to take care of the sheep. It doesn't take a person who is got in their hearts.
Right. I agree.
And so, I mean, it's fantastic, but we got to do something more. Now, what I'd like to do, Hugh, because it's just perfect. You set it up perfect here, and I want to read this so people can hear this. I got this off the Federalist.com again, but it kind of explains what I think, and maybe you'll believe or think the same thing. It says, before the 1960s, there was almost no mass shooting incidents in the United States, but the trend has increased ever since then. Why? The number of homicides have decreased, and the number of households that had guns also dropped significantly. There must be another cause. Maybe the continual focus on the tool used by these killers is less important than the emotional imbalance that leads to them pulling the trigger. And this is the paragraph I want to read. A major change since the 1960s have been the rise in liberal social policies and the destruction of time-honored values that lead to societal success and stability. The most glaring example is the massive decline in two-parent households. From 1960 to 2014, the percentage of children living in a home with two parents and no divorces dropped from 73% to 46%. That number is stunningly lower for the black children, now at 22%. I think that's got a lot to do with it.
I think it's got an enormous amount to do with it. That's why I mentioned it's societal, it's cultural, it's all part of what's going on in this country. We've taken discipline out of the schools. Our family units are deteriorating. You have liberal causes out there that are in the minority that are destroying the core family unit. I think those are the attacks that have taken place in our society that have probably helped lead to this. Again, those aren't the only things.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
No.
But I think that social media is part of it. I think the virtual reality stuff that's out there. In fact, there is an app that is just appalling that was created. That's a school shooter app.
Oh, jeez.
That I heard about this past week or so. I mean, stuff like that should never even be allowed to happen.
I know it's all done
under the freedom of the freedoms, you know.
And, yeah, but we don't scream fire in the theater. We don't scream hijack on an aircraft. You know, it's
right.
just
exactly.
common sense.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hugh, let me.
If we can restore the family unit and discipline in our schools. That, I think, also treats the underlying problem.
Well, let me ask you this. I know you're an optimist, okay, but let's talk realist for a second. Do you think we've passed the point of no return when it comes to getting this country back the way it used to be in the sense of honor, respect, dignity for one another, family upbringings, things of that nature? Are we past that point? Because I look at it and I say there are definitely elements and blocks that maintain it, but we're slowly sinking with the rest of society the way it's so loose and crazy.
Well, Matt, let me just say I'm going to give you a quote from Winston Churchill.
Okay.
Back in World War II when England was being attacked in the air by the Germans. We should never, 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 never surrender. The values, the principles, the values, and the virtues that have made this country so great. And it's going to take leadership. It's going to take men and women who are willing to put their political lives on the line and go out there and say, enough is enough. We've got to restore principles, values, and virtues. We've got to restore dignity, integrity, and respect. And it's got to be in our families, in our homes. It's got to be in our schools. And it's got to be in our society.
Hey, Hugh, I've got retired police chief Randy Dixon here. I'd like to ask a question. You okay with that?
Sure, of course. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, got one quick question for
Hi.
You. Do you
sure.
ever see the day that where it will be legislated and mandated? And I know it's on the books now where an ISD can do it if they want to. Do you think it'll be mandated where they'll be required, especially with like one that's got a little bit of a larger base of students, to have an internal police department within that school district?
Oh, Randy, I think you're going to have some folks that might attempt to do that. I think your educators and your folks that are in the public school administration side of it are probably going to oppose that. I think it's premature to kind of give an opinion of where that might go. But I can tell you, after talking to all of my school administrators in Bell County and some of my colleagues in the legislature, that debate is going to take place. I'm just not sure what the outcome is going to be.
Hugh, I've got another point that was on the governor's plan here. I'd like to see your opinion on it. It says making schools safer, immediately increase law enforcement presence at schools. And then it says here, prioritizing hiring retired peace officers, specifically police, sheriffs, and constables, and military veterans for school security. I'm more focused on the military veteran at the moment because I look at a police officer, a deputy, a sheriff like that, and they most likely just got out of what they were doing and they're looking to do something else. Whereas retired military, can be a long spectrum of time. I mean, I've been out of the military for quite a long time, but I'm pretty much on top of my game. I mean, I could be utilized as ex-military for securing a place free of charge just because I have a love and interest. But I remember a story where somebody tried to do that, and they got criticized. We don't want this guy around. What do you see? Do you see that as a viable way to help secure schools by getting people who are prior military to pull security?
Well, I can tell you that is part of the discussion as well of all these other things that we're talking about and what you're asking about. And there are some veteran groups out there that are proposing that. I think it's too early to say if that's an alternative or not, because right now I think you've got those in the education sector with our public schools who are adamantly opposed to bringing any firearms on the campus. And I think that you have that debate that's going to continue. And I don't see any of those things gaining any ground or gaining any strength in the short run. I think it's going to take a lot of discussion, debate by members to deter and to see where the chips fall on that.
Yeah, I get this.
Again, I think it's just too early to determine if that's going to have any impact.
I get this potential concept idea of micromanagement, and I'll tell you why I say that. Another part of the governor's plan, train more school marshals and improve the program, and one of the bullet points was remove the firearm storage requirement for school marshals who are in direct contact with students. You know what that tells me? That tells me, well, we want the marshal there, but he's got to lock his gun up. So when something happens, he's got to go run and get his gun, right?
Well, let me tell you, remember 911. Everybody remembers 911.
Yes.
Okay? And I was a brigade commander in the Texas Army National Guard. We were making the decision about putting armed soldiers in our airports. Okay? And our discussion and our debate with the lawyers, and I'm not picking on lawyers per se, it's just part of the process.
Yeah, don't pick on them too hard because they sponsor some of the show.
I understand.
Okay.
Part of the discussion that we had that weekend after 911 to determine about putting armed soldiers in the Air Force was whether or not we were going to give them ammunition. Okay?
That's crazy.
Which was ridiculous.
It is.
And so we ended up making a decision of putting armed soldiers in the airports, and I had, I think, 6 airports that I was responsible for. We put a sand barrel outside each airport, and what we did is we only used soldiers of the rank of buck sergeant or above, actually putting them in the airports with loaded weapons, and we did do that. But I can tell you, even then, under the crisis we were under, it was a serious debate from the military standpoint. So I just share with you that's an experience that I had. I thought it was kind of an interesting discussion.
Yeah, very interesting. And for the sake of time here, Hugh, I'm going to move on to another point that's kind of funny too, or I look at it a certain way. And it says, once again on the governor's plan, provide active shooter and emergency response training. And one of the bullet points here that raises my eyebrow is the Texas School Safety Center will deliver a workshop-based course that allows for hands-on application of high-quality planning practices. You know what I see when I read that? I see PowerPoint, and I cannot stand PowerPoint presentations. People are so focused on writing notes down, not paying attention to the speaker, listening the meat potatoes of what they're trying to say. That's why when I give my license to carry class, I do not do PowerPoint. I get in your face. I make you remember it. And then the other part, hands-on application, I think what they're talking about is hands-on the paperwork. I mean, what kind of actual hands-on training are they going to do? And so once again, it goes back to my thought process of micromanagement and making it look good, but actually not doing anything.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. I mean, PowerPoint by death is something I certainly I don't like to get a whole lot of. I do know that there is active shooter training that has been going on in some of our schools, and I've talked to our superintendents and administrators. This year alone, I've had multiple conference calls, and I've been on all the campuses to meet with our schools and to have this discussion.
about what are you doing, what can you do, what will you do, what are you unable to do as far as providing security on your campus. And I've done that in Bell County with the 9 school districts that we have.
Hugh, because we're running out of time, let's finalize it by this. Why don't you, if you want, recap everything here to the best of your ability or what you want to say. Tell us something you're doing or promote something, whatever. But let's close it out with that, and we'll say goodbye at the end of it.
Well, I guess in closing, let me just say that I believe that, that this debate is going to continue. We're not going to solve anything here in the short run. I think it's going to be in the next legislative session. I'm not anticipating a special session to be called by the governor. I think that any attempt to address our individual freedoms probably is not going to go very far. And I think we're going to have this discussion over the next 4 or 5 months before session starts. And we'll have a better idea come November, December time frame of what we may or may not do in addressing these issues.
I'll tell you what, though, I want to compliment the governor. He's doing a lot to make it look like he's doing a lot without really doing a lot. So that's pretty good politics.
Yes, sir.
And I meant that as a compliment because I know it's so difficult to do it. You got to make a lot of people happy. And there's some points in there that you can actually do, and there's other points in there it's a feel-good thing. And I totally get it. I know both sides. You gotta act a certain way and do certain things. So, but Hugh, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy day and schedule to
Absolutely.
Come on the show.
You bet.
It's always been a pleasure to talk with you on the radio and talking to you in person. So until I see you again or talk to you again, you take care, be safe, and enjoy what you're doing out there.
All right. Y'all enjoy the weekend. Thank you very much, Matt.
All right, buddy. Take care. Trey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have the awesome Master Cindy Key here, I think. I think she's going to be here, and she's going to do some terrible things to me to show you how to protect yourselves. So we'll see you on the other side.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. I don't know if Master Cindy Key is going to be able to make it, so what we're going to do is Trey's setting up a repeat performance of another awesome segment with her, and we are ready to play. And what are we talking about on this one, Trey?
Redirecting the perpetrator's energy.
That's fantastic. Let's go ahead and play that. We'll see you on the other side.
Let's say there's a door, and you're in front of me, and I think you're going to be a threat or you're going to bother me, and maybe you're just messing with me, and I just want to get to that door and get out of the way, and I don't really want to do a whole lot to you.
And once again, it'll be on video probably Monday or Tuesday. You get to see it. We'll do it one way, then do the reverse way, and then you can check it out. Okay.
So if he's coming at me and I just panic and I just put my hands up here, we're in a struggle now. It's his power against my power unless I start striking. Okay, and all I want to do is get to that door. He's bothering me. I'm just going to turn. Okay, here, the first he's coming at me, and I stay chest to chest with him, and my hands are out trying to stop his momentum. But if he's taller and bigger than me, he's going to push me, and I don't want that. But I want him to go past me, so I'm going to put one hand on one shoulder, one hand on the other. But I'm not going to stay straight at him. I'm going to open up like a door, just like I have a hinge on my back leg, and I'm just going to turn like a door. And that's going to take him that way, and then I can go this way.
I'll tell you what, I was talking to her during the break, and because we were practicing this, my energy was directed forward. I wasn't even expecting a twist, and when that happens, you get loss of balance. So that worked out really well. Let's reverse it so they can see it from the other side.
So again, if I try to stop his power, and we're chest to chest, now we're in a power struggle here. Unless I start striking. But I don't want that. And I'm right-handed, so I'm going to turn him. I'm going to use my left hand for control, and I'm going to turn his shoulder. And as I'm turning, I'm walking, and I have my hand here. But if he comes at me, I have my kick. And so I'll stop him that way. And then I'm just trying. All I'm doing is trying to make space and get to my opening.
Very good. Okay, we're going to have that on video. Miss Key's got some things going on. Miss Key, why don't you tell everybody what you got going on, where you're at, how they can get a hold of you, so on and so forth.
I have a summer special, and I only have 8 openings left because I'm only accepting 10 new students. And there's 8 openings left, and it is $99 for 2 months of class. And the uniform and stuff you have to get for me, and that's $45. But if you want something for your kids to learn some real self-defense, and we also prepare for a world championship that is in July or August. I have to look at the calendar, but we do that, and I usually take the whole school to that.
See, I mean, everybody, she takes you from beginning all the way to competition. So, I mean, you learn the whole ropes. You get to compete. It's just like shooting at a piece of paper with a gun. A lot of good it is if you don't go advanced training. Well, she takes you in there as the piece of paper and turns you into a round robin, and she starts learning you, teaching you how to maneuver, taking the competitions to compete against other people, things like that. So,
30 seconds.
Talk it up.
Well, the difference between my class 2 and some other classes some that I've been to is that some schools test. So if you come to my school, I have a traditional martial arts school, and we do some fun stuff within the tradition, but the kids test at their own rate. So if we have it, because I'm a terrible slow learner, if you're a slow learner, he may test a little later than somebody else, but if I have one that's really learning and he's respectful and, you know, he kind of gets the mentality, then he may test before. I don't hold people back and say, okay, we're testing every 2 months, or test you if you're not ready. If you're not ready, you're not testing.
All right, everybody. Until next week, keep it powder dry and God bless. Thank you, Ms. Keith.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Quicken Loans.
I'm Jim Taylor. Defending U.S. economic interests with trade tariffs.
We will take whatever steps are necessary to protect American industry and workers from unfair foreign trading practices, of which really there are many.
The G7 summits, not yet over in Quebec, but President Trump is done. He is on his way to Singapore for the first ever meeting between the United States and North Korea.
It's unknown territory in the truest sense, but I really feel confident. I feel that Kim Jong-un wants to do something great for